D-Mace Vingen and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. We are live inside Bridgestone Arena, where the Nashville Predators will host the St. Louis Blues tonight at 7, pregame starting at 6, right here on 102.5 The Game. Mm-hmm. How's everybody doing today?
Hey, I'm doing wonderful, man. I'm doing great.
Derek, I believe it was your old teammate, Ray Lewis.
Yes.
Who said, be pissed off for greatness.
Absolutely.
And you know what? I'm feeling pissed off for greatness today.
Okay. I like that.
I'm bringing
it. I like
it.
That energy.
I'm bringing
it. I love
it.
That energy. Bring it.
Don't cross me today, text line 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. But I want to start with the Sharon Moore story. Mm. It broke when we were on the air yesterday. The University of Michigan fired its head football coach, Sharon Moore, after the school said he was in a quote-unquote inappropriate relationship with a staff member. But then he was arrested for an alleged assault, I believe. And last I checked, he's still in jail. This story has so many twists and turns. Will, you were saying before the show, you can't keep up with the updates on this
Look,
story.
When I first got to the arena this morning for the morning skate, I thought I knew the story, and people were telling me new things. My broadcast crew was like, well, what about this? What about this? And I was like, wow, I got to catch up. And then I thought I knew, and now I come here today for a second time. There's more stuff.
It's, listen, it's fluid. The story is fluid.
Yes.
You know.
It is.
It is very fluid.
The story is ongoing.
It went from, you know, them firing him to them firing him because he had an inappropriate relationship to allegedly him getting something delivered to his office.
What? What was delivered to his office?
See, all these
details. It's a whole
it's fluid.
Of
I can't
it's fluid,
keep up.
Man. It's fluid.
It's allegedly. By me is what's
he
happening.
Had a plan B delivered to his office. I think about Uber. I think that's what the story. I believe that's what the story. Allegedly,
not a preparation H. A plan
no,
B.
A plan B.
Got it.
And allegedly, he had this happen, and allegedly, he went to the young lady's house, and some things transpired, and he find himself now in jail. He took a bad situation, which it was bad, and just, you know, him doing what he did, that's bad in itself. But then you took that, and you compounded it with more things. Now, it's coming out that he had some mental issues.
Yes, Nicole Auerbach of NBC Sports posted within the hour, quote, Michigan had been alerted prior to Wednesday that Sharon Moore was dealing with mental health issues, yet Ward Manuel, Michigan's AD, fired him alone with no HR rep and no security present, source told at NBC Sports.
Wow. So
They fired him with cause, which means.
Yeah, they did have cause.
Right.
You know, they did have cause there. It's an ever-changing story. You know, listen, he put himself in this situation. I don't know his mental state, but he put himself in this situation. And when you put yourself in a situation, then you have to deal with the repercussions that comes with it. And try not to compound the problem which you have already created. And what he has done is compounded the problem. He took again a infidelity, allegedly, he took an infidelity into him being in jail. You know, that's a lot. You basically took your career from being on pause to you may not get a job again.
Not in college.
Exactly. In college, you may not get another job. So, I mean, again, I don't know and I don't claim to know what was on his mind, but, I mean, listen, he took a bad situation and made it worse.
Now, Derek, you have no love lost.
No,
for the
whatsoever.
University of Michigan.
I knew.
Disclaimer, Derek Mason, a proud alum of Michigan State University. Yeah. But anecdotally, it feels like there have been a ton of controversies surrounding the University of Michigan football team in recent years. Mm-hmm. From Connor Stallions to this, to Harbaugh recruiting violations, right? Mm-hmm. Feels like trouble follows the Wolverines on the football field.
Oh, absolutely. And again, I am not here to, you know, be some moral compass or anything like that. But listen, if you put yourself in this position, I said the same thing. Don't act as if – I'm not going to act as if when Mel Tucker did what he did, I wasn't like, hey, straight up, you shouldn't have done it. You got to deal with the consequences. That's the way I see things, especially in that context. I don't care if you're my friend, my child. It's like you have to give them, hey, listen, do I hate that it happened? Yes. But you got to deal with the consequences. Will I try to help you if I'm a parent? Yes, as much as I possibly can. But you have to deal sometimes with consequences that come. You just try to lessen the consequences. And it's the same for Sharon Moore. Listen, dude, you put yourself in this situation. I am sure that when and listen, I've seen it across the board. When someone gets hired as a head coach, there has to be something within you or within your wife that says you can't have her as an assistant. You just can't. Because you know why? Because y'all spend so much time together. And even though there may not be anything, something can develop. Or always have somebody around you. And it seems like there was that boundary wasn't put in place. And this should make every head coach think moving forward about hiring.
There's been many in the past.
Exactly.
That have
about
not,
hiring.
That fell into the same trap.
And I'm not saying that. You just got to protect. You just have to make sure that there's not a reason whether it's to hire another male or if a woman's in that position to hire another female, because you never want to be in a position where, yeah, you never envision this happening, but the more and more time y'all spend together, something may end up happening. So from that standpoint, he should have protected him and his family and her by not having her as his assistant. And then maybe, just maybe, and I'm not saying that it still wouldn't have happened, but maybe, just maybe, it wouldn't have happened. But listen, I'm not shedding no tears over a Michigan guy. Come on, man.
So I've seen an excerpt from a book about Nick Saban making the rounds. It was a 2015 book, I believe, titled Saban, The Making of a Coach by Monty Burke. And here is the quote, the passage from the book that's making the rounds. Ultimately, quote, this is allegedly Saban, quote, ultimately, you never want to sleep with anybody who has less to lose than you do, Saban told his players. So ultimately, if I'm ever going to sleep around on Miss Terry, it's going to be Hillary effing Rodman Clinton, end quote.
I mean, I don't know how to answer that. I'm not going to try to answer that. But listen, some people feel that way. They feel that way. They feel if you are whatever, it could just be a business relationship.
Look,
and
this
you're
is
doing
not,
business.
This is not something unique to sports.
Exactly.
Right?
That's what I'm saying. Even if you're doing business relationship,
yeah.
I'm not going to get into business with you if you ain't got more to lose than me. If I'm the one that's putting up everything and you ain't got – I don't want to be in business with you. I don't. Because if it goes belly up, who has to take the brunt of it? Me, not you. And you could just walk away. So from that standpoint, yeah, I agree with them. In that case, but the other stuff, man, like you said, Willie, this has been happening for
– centuries.
Gosh, man.
Centuries.
I can't imagine how the Michigan AD –
I think Shakespeare was writing about this stuff.
Did you read that with No Fear Shakespeare like I did back in the day? I don't think that existed when you were in school.
What, No Fear Shakespeare?
No Fear Shakespeare.
I've never heard of this. I was an English minor.
It was Cliff Notes. Is it Cliff Notes or Cliff's Notes? It doesn't matter.
I know Cliff.
Yes.
And his notes.
Yeah. So on one page, there would be the Shakespearean text.
Yes.
On the other page, there would be a modern English translation.
Oh, very, very useful tool.
Very useful.
I wish I had that.
I don't know how the Michigan AD survives all of this. Again, there have been a lot of scandals over the past few years involving the Michigan football team. So eventually, someone from up high has to take the fall, right? I can't imagine Ward Manuel survives this if he doesn't get fired today. I'm sure he gets fired at some point, right?
It depends on how long they knew about this. And were they going to say if they had beat Michigan or, you know, would
beat
they
Ohio
have
State.
Said anything? Well, Ohio
that's,
State.
That's
would
a,
they have said anything?
Legit question.
You know, so to me, it's how long did he know, did he have this information in hand? And why did he
or,
choose
or,
to?
And at any point, did they go to him and say, look, we know what's going on. You've got to figure this out because this is inappropriate and this is your warning. We'll find out in time because you can already tell with this spin of he's got mental issues. Health issues. Uh-huh. And he told them, so the defense is already riling up. Because fired for cause is zero money, and he's going to try to collect whatever he can, which all coaches do, and many have won.
Michael in Madison says, allegedly the DoorDash driver who delivered the quote-unquote backup plan tipped off the Michigan AD.
Wow. So he knows them, so he just sent him a text, like, hey, this is what happened.
Is he a Michigan guy or a Michigan State guy?
Exactly. He may be a Michigan State guy. You never know.
You never know.
Dustin claims that I just said the word today like they do in the men's clinic commercial. I did? I don't know. I have to go back and listen to the men's clinic commercial. Did I say today? I don't remember how I said today. But okay. I guess it sounded like a men's clinic commercial. So
yeah.
Who's to say? I don't know. One texter said, I think they waited to save the recruiting class. It did happen after National Signing Day.
But they ain't going to end up now. But it doesn't matter because these kids can say – the coach got fired.
Yeah.
They have cause to leave, too. So that was stupid. You know, and then what if they lose their five-star quarterback that was quarterbacking for them this year because he went there for more? Now he may be
really
thinking, I'm out of here.
Kyle, who is a Michigan fan, says, I heard about the side chick back in April.
Wow.
Some of the players knew.
Wow.
Well,
see,
good
it
for
depends
you, Kyle.
On how long. That's the thing. How long did the university know this was going on? And why now? Did they act on it? Is it because they found out about the alleged plan B or abortion, potential abortion? Is that when they said something? Because if it comes out that you knew this prior to all of this, then the AD does need to go. And there are probably other people that need to go as well.
So I've been looking at stories ranking the next Michigan head coaches, candidates for the next Michigan head coach, and Kalen DeBoer's names popped up a couple of times. I thought that was odd. If I am not mistaken, Kalen DeBoer has no connection to Michigan, right? There's no connective tissue.
It's the smart move by a lot of high-end coaches. Uh-huh. You get a little flirtation going. You get your agent, get your name out there, and strengthen your position. Just let everybody know around you that, hey, if you're not happy with your current coach, he could go somewhere else, and then that is the dance they do, is it not?
Yeah, it's gotten.
Jimmy Sexton's got it down to an art form.
It's become more of a routine dance.
It's a routine dance,
and they know all the steps. So let's just say that.
Because Kalen DeBoer felt the heat. They lost the game against Florida State, and there were people going, "How much does it cost to get Kalen DeBoer out?" Like it was out there. Uh-huh. He remembers that.
Yeah.
So he said, "Okay, you thought I enjoyed that? Well, I can go flirt with Michigan if you don't like it." And some people were like, "Well, go.
Please go."
They call your bluff.
We don't want to see too many of these 9-3 seasons.
Yeah.
The candidates listed for the job on ESPN.
10-3, I believe.
Kalen DeBoer, Jesse Minter, Chargers defensive coordinator who coached at Michigan with Harbaugh and received a 1-year show cause for recruiting violations while on the staff, but it expires this week or early next week. Jed Fish in Washington, Duke coach Manny Diaz, and Cleveland Browns offensive coordinator Tommy Reese.
Fish has been everywhere, it seems like. He's been in the league a long time. I think he was in Baltimore with me.
Really?
When I was in Baltimore, yeah. He was he had something to do with the offense. But, yeah, he's been around a long time. I can't see them going in after what has happened with –
he was an offensive assistant with the Ravens from 2004 to 2007.
Exactly. So he's been a lot of places, a few places. But do you think they want to hire somebody from that staff, that Harbaugh staff? So Minter, he may be a guy that, the name sounds great or he has affiliation with Michigan, but he was a part of that tie, that tie with Harbaugh.
Yeah. There's some of that Connor Stallion stank on Jesse Minter.
And Michigan – most of the time, likes to be within the family.
Exactly.
Right? They like to go in the family.
The family.
Yeah.
The family.
The family.
There are a lot of texts that I can't read.
What a shock.
For example.
I appreciate all of your participation. I'm not sure.
Is it borderline or is it just like way over the line, these texts? Like, do they think when they text it, hey, they might read this.
They just may.
Or is he just is the person just saying, I'm texting, I don't care if they read it on the air, I just want them to get a laugh.
Okay.
Okay, what you got?
Tread lightly.
What
yeah.
You got?
I'll
let me see. Let
no.
me see. Let me see.
Okay, hold on. What about this one? Tell me if I can read that one.
Nah, you
no,
can't.
No, I can't. I can't do it. I can't do it. Here's one about Kalen DeBoer in Michigan. With how quickly Bama fans grab the pitchforks, he might believe there is more stability and would be resetting the time clock in an overall easier league.
Yeah. What planet is that guy from? Michigan's no different. Like, you think Lane Kiffin's going to go to LSU and lose three in a row, and they're going to be go, oh, yeah, Coach Kiffin, he's going to be fine. Everything's good.
Jeff says they were talking about, I don't know who they is, but they were talking about Clark Lee as an option on 97-1 the ticket in Detroit today. Clark Lee just signed a six-year contract.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, leave our coach alone, man. Get your own coach.
Clark Lee has it made in the shade here in Nashville with how well Vanderbilt has been doing. But we will keep an eye on this crazy Michigan football story, which is something that I think has been said each of the past, like, 3 years. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and I will read them if they are appropriate. And some of you have been texting me, and they're not. And I want to read your text, but they have to be appropriate.
Stay in bounds. Stay in your lane,
stay
please.
In,
stay in the radio lane.
Stay in the radio
this
lane.
Is not a, this is not a podcast.
That is true. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Cam Ward had some post-game comments on Sunday that got some attention. And yesterday, he was asked to explain them. And we will discuss those coming up next. 615-737-1025. If you are looking for a good spot to watch NFL games this Sunday, you should go to Twin Peaks in Madison, home of the 29-degree beer, and join 102.5 The Game for the pregame show before the Titans take on the 49ers. The pregame show is brought to you by Tennessee Brew Works and Circus Sportsbook Kentucky. Chase and Big Joe will be broadcasting live at the all-new Circus Sportsbook Kentucky inside the Mint Gaming Hall this Monday, prior to the Monday Night Football matchup between the Miami Dolphins and the Pittsburgh Steelers. We'll lead on it. Derek Mason and Adam Vingan here with you. David James is back at our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We are live at Bridgestone Arena, Predators versus Blues tonight. It is Nate Bargatze bobblehead night. I've got mine right here. Looks good.
It is well made.
Yes.
I think somebody
It even has his big dumb eyes. Those are his words. That's the name of the tour that will be here Friday and Saturday. I'm going on Saturday afternoon. I'm excited about it. Hope to see a lot of you people there as well.
I think there'll be some people.
There will be some people. He had to add a third show because he's a very popular guy. Also, I didn't see this until after the fact, but apparently I read a story in the Tennessean that as part of Vanderbilt's plan to flip Jared Curtis, Nate Bargatze gave him a phone call. Apparently Theo Vaughn was in on it too. So the heavy hitters.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do to get what you need for the university.
Well,
these are new resources. Yes. New resources. It's a new time.
Sometimes it's just a phone call.
My favorite line, Nate Bargatze at the college game day when he was on in the quad on ESPN, he said, I don't know what the rules are, but do you want to be in a movie?
There's no rules. The rules are there's no rules. Let's just play.
So Cam Ward had some comments after the Titans defeated the Cleveland Browns 31-29 on Sunday. The word I would use to describe Ward's tone is dissatisfied. Because although the Titans did win, and wins have been scarce around here, it wasn't a perfect game by any means for the Titans. Cam Ward didn't play well. The defense didn't play well down the stretch. And Cam Ward had a comment that I'm paraphrasing here. He said, you can hide stuff when you win. And Derek,
yes,
you would agree with that, right? Mm-hmm. And that led to Arden Key apparently saying on the team charter back to Nashville, don't listen to what Cam said. Enjoy the win. It's hard to win in this league. And by the way, I thought we should update our listeners because we did talk about this the other day. Paul Gaharsky reported that Will Bowling of the Titans flagship radio station, who is also the sideline reporter for road games, has been removed from the team's charter flight as a result.
That wasn't going to happen.
As a result of sharing this anecdote about Arden Key, which was really benign, but I digress. So go ahead.
No. We'll talk about that later. Go ahead.
So after practice yesterday, Cam Ward was asked about his comments after the game in Cleveland. Here is part of his exchange with reporters yesterday at practice.
I don't think there's been a week where you haven't said winning is the only thing you care about when we've asked you about progress and all of that. And then after you won on Sunday, you said, well, winning, you know, winning and losing kind of the same. It doesn't really matter to me. A lot of us are having trouble kind of balancing that out. Can you kind of expand on what you meant?
Winning and losing, they both got a price. They both got a price to pay. It just depends on which one you want to be a part of.
But you've talked consistently about how much winning means to you. Why Sunday did you seem not to feel differently than you felt after all the failed games?
Because there's a way to win games. There's a way to finish out games. There's a standard that you got to play with every game to give yourself the best, you know, situation to win. But the biggest thing, you got to expect to win every time you step on the field.
Did you feel like the team didn't play that standard, or you didn't play that standard in winning?
We played to a standard good enough to win. We didn't play to our best standard. At times of the game, we were sloppy. Offensively, I was sloppy myself. And then defensively, we were. So we just got to continue to emphasize the good, and we got to be real critical on the bad.
So that was Cam Ward after practice yesterday. Derek, your thoughts on
Look, he handled that really well for a rookie. That was a trap. That was I'm bored. There's nothing to talk about, so let's come up with a story. That's like a mind teaser. Like, hey, you said, like, come on, Paul. Figure it out. It's pretty easy. Mm-hmm. Paul went to Columbia. He's an Ivy League student. I think he understands deep down. He was just trying to get a quote. Trying to trying to trick him to say something controversial. And I admire Cam Ward's media skills there for articulating very well what I knew he already meant.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy.
I mean,
look, you want to play well. You have a standard, win or lose, where you want to play well. How many coaches do you say, you know what, we won, but we were not the better team tonight? Coaches say that all the time. And there's times where a coach says, you know what, we played our butts off tonight. And I'll take that effort. We do that every night. We're going to win a lot of games. That's the same thing Cam Ward said. It wasn't, as Hal Gill likes to say, it's not rocket surgery.
He got a point with that. It's not. Listen, Paul planned a dance, and Cam played it right along with him. And, you know, Paul wanted to elicit something from Cam, and Cam wouldn't give it to him. Listen, this is, like I said, it's the dance between, you know, reporter, journalist, and player. That's the back and forth. You want to get something that you can put on your site. And listen, whether it be wrong or right, you're looking for something you could slap right on the, you know, the head of your tweet or, you know, your article that you write. So it gets people to click in. So it's basically clickbait. Get people to click in to read more about your story. And, you know, it's Paul's done it. Bunch of people have done it. You know, being reporters or journalists. You try to get that one quote. You keep asking. You try to get that one quote. And sometimes you get it. And sometimes you don't. That's just the game. I'm not saying Paul's a bad guy. But I think Cam handled it well, like you said, Willie. In this world, I heard Crow's statement say, and you can go back and you can find it somewhere. The reason why he gets upset and wins is because winning, if you allow it to happen, it becomes a problem. I want to address it now before it becomes a problem.
Yes.
Because people only address it when you're losing. And then you look at it and you start to dissect it. It's like, well, this stuff was happening while we were winning. Nobody just addressed it. Well, Cam is from a place of, listen, even though we're winning is great, but there's a lot of flaws in this win. We're not the team that we want to be. So we are so far from the team we want to be, it's pathetic. So having one win, I'm not going to sit here and act like I won a Super Bowl. There are still things any coach will tell you, especially coaching a team that's in the Titans' position. Yes, the win was great, but I go back on that film, as I'm watching, I'm thinking there's a lot of mistakes, a whole bunch of them. And if that team was a little bit better, they would have beat us. And they still had a chance to beat us. So we can't sit here and say, oh, yes, we won to have a parade. Yeah, we won. We won the second game in 13
yes,
contests, the 14 contests. So how the hell, why am I going to be happy about that? Like, that makes no damn sense as a competitor. Listen, we didn't have bad seasons, and I wasn't happy about losses. Even when we had good wins, when we had a good season, those losses are, you don't want them. And in a win, sometimes you understand that, yeah, it was a win, but look at all that stuff that we did that we didn't correct in that win. It was just that team on the other side of us was a little bit worse than us that day.
If Cam Ward doesn't make it, ultimately, it will not be because of his work ethic
exactly.
and his mindset. That's what I like about him the most. I got some questions whether he ultimately will get there. I'm rooting for him, but I really admire this part of him because that's good stuff. That was next. That could have been an easy trap to fall into. I like that mindset. Let me give you a couple examples mm-hmm. of quarterbacks from the past that ultimately didn't make it. Vince Young. He was a guy that, what did everybody say? Well, look at his record as a starter. They're winning. Well, they're winning because they had a great defense. Mm-hmm. They had a great running game. And he was just good enough. And he did not improve.
No.
And, you know, he was resting on, well, when Vince Young starts, it's whatever and whatever. He had a winning record. But he didn't get better. He wasn't the guy that was driving to get better at all times. Tim Tebow is another one. Remember, he was winning games. He was 4-for-19. He threw one great pass. And everybody's like, Tim Tebow, he's a winner, man. He's a winner. And now, Tim Tebow, I know, had the right work ethic and everything. Uh-huh. But ultimately, the winning alone doesn't keep you in the league.
Exactly.
Right? You have to get better, and you have to put up numbers eventually to keep your job and keep winning. Right?
No, you do. And in this business, whether, you know, especially for a young quarterback like Cam and an organization that's in the situation that they're in, winning is winning a game. Because I'm not going to even say winning. Because that implies you're winning
right,
like multiple
right.
games.
They're not winning.
Exactly. They had won a game. So when you win another game, you know that even in that win, if you want to ultimately get to where you want to go, you know there are a lot of things within that win that needs to be addressed. And if you are going to be the face of this organization, which Cam will be, you can't dismiss those things that you need to address just because you won a football game. Winning, he said, two things can be in the same space at the same time when you're talking about this. You can enjoy the win, or you can say winning is everything, but you can also say, hey, listen, yeah, we won, but there are a lot of things within that win we got to correct, because if we don't, you know what's going to happen the next time? We're going to lose. And then what you going to ask? Well, y'all won last week, and it was yeah. nobody. Well, I'm telling you now this week that we need some things to correct. So if we do need, if we do lose next week and we don't correct those things, I could come to you and say, hey, listen, even in that win, I told y'all last week, these are the things that we needed to correct. We did in the next following week, and we played a much better team.
I know that this text is going to trigger both of you, but I'm going to read it anyway. One texter says, the team, in all caps, played well, not good. The only person who was bad was Cam.
I guess this person mm-hmm. will watch the game. See, that's the point.
And Cam didn't say he played
exactly.
well.
He didn't say he played well. But that's what Cam is alluding to. It's like, you are not going to look at the flaws because we won. I need to look at the flaws because I am tasked at looking at the flaws. I am tasked. You can be the rah-rah people. Y'all can be the rah-rah people. But I'm the one that's got to go in there and dissect everything and wonder why this didn't happen or this didn't happen or if that happened, what would have happened, you know, in conjunction to that or with that. So when the quarterback comes out and says, and he kept himself in that pile too. He said, I didn't play well. We didn't play well at a time. The defense didn't play well at a time. What's wrong with him saying that in the manner that he said it. I don't understand. Like, you should be able to comprehend what he's saying within, you know, hey, listen, we the win is good, but I'm not going to sit here and feel like I'm going home and pop a couple of bottles of champagne tonight because we got one win and two in 13 or 14 games. I'm not going to pop a bottle of champagne for that. I'm going to look at it. I'm going to appreciate the win. But I also know that there are a lot of things on that film that needs to be corrected.
615-737-1025 will take your comments on Cam Ward's comments yesterday and after the Cleveland game. The Titans are back in action on Sunday at the San Francisco 49ers. 615-737-1025. Mitch Light of The Athletic will join us coming up next to talk about college football. There's a lot to talk about, so we will do it with Mitch coming up next. 615-737-1025. Tomorrow, between noon and 3, Chase and Big Joe will have your chance to win a $100 Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa gift card, and you can qualify to win a $1,000 Genesis Diamonds gift card. It's the 12 Days of Christmas on 102.5 The Game. D-Maze, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. We are presented by Bax Homeworks, remodeling done right. Get a free estimate now at baxhomeworks.com. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Mitch Light of The Athletic to help us talk about everything that's going on in college football. And Mitch, I'm sure just like us, you are watching this story unfold in Ann Arbor with former Michigan head football coach Sharon Moore. I'm wondering what you think the fallout from this will be, because as I mentioned to Willie and Derek, it feels like scandal has been following the Michigan football team in recent years. Do you think the AD gets the axe for this? What do you think the long-term ramifications are of this Sharon Moore story?
Yeah, I'd be shocked if Ward Manuel, the athletic director, survived this. There has been nothing but scandal under his watch, and it's not just football. Juwan Howard, these weren't to this scale, but you know, he punched Wisconsin's coach in a layup line and a handshake line a few years ago. He had an altercation with a strength coach, ended up leaving the school, actually came to Vanderbilt and is now at Notre Dame. So there's just been one after the other. And as new information comes out in this Sharon Moore deal, it makes Ward Manuel look worse. So, yeah, it is one of the, I don't know what word you want to use, stories in college football we've seen in recent years. And the funny thing, or the ironic thing, is we published a story, I don't know if you guys, I'm sure you read everything on The Athletic college football, so I'm sure you read this, where we had a staff list of, like, this season seemed crazier than usual. Here are, like, the 35 crazy things. And most of them were, like, fun things about, like, the Texas A&M state trooper and the South Carolina player and all that. And, like, the day we published that story, probably the craziest thing that's happened in recent years happened.
So, Mitch, we've gotten some laughs out of how Notre Dame has handled its exclusion from the college football playoff field. I need Willie to give me a good Bavakwa.
Bavakwa?
We've had a lot of fun with Pete Bavakwa. We've had fun with the fact that Notre Dame briefly canceled a book signing by Ivan Mazel because he was on the college football playoff committee. But here's something that I found interesting from Dan Wolkin of Yahoo Sports. Quote, athletic directors in other leagues who learned from Yahoo Sports' Ross Dellinger on Sunday about the memorandum of understanding that grants Notre Dame preferential playoff access are threatening to freeze them out of future schedules. Do you think that all of the saber rattling that Pete Bavakwa has been doing will lead to some sort of consequences for Notre Dame?
I don't, because for a couple of reasons. Notre Dame has, I think I saw this, I don't know if it was our Pete Sampson or someone else, they have like 9 or 10 games locked in for like the next 6 years. And everyone, problem with college sports is everyone acts in their own best interests all the time, whether it's schools or conferences. And there's a lot of schools that want to play Notre Dame because the attendance and all the notoriety. So like when push comes to shove is I'm just using Arkansas as an example. Maybe that's not a great one because they're in the SEC, but is Arkansas going to turn down a home-and-home with Notre Dame just to show them a lesson? I don't think so. But the best thing that happened to Notre Dame the last couple of days was Sharon Moore stealing their thunder, so to speak. The schools have been battling this week for getting all the most attention in a negative way.
We'll talk with Mitch Light of The Athletic. Now, getting back on Sharon Moore in Michigan, where do you think they go as far as head coach? And why do you think that Kalen DeBoer's name is being thrown out there, considering he's still at Alabama? Alabama's in the college football playoffs. Who do you believe is the next coach, and why do you think his name is being thrown in there?
Yeah, Kalen DeBoer's interesting, obviously. He's very well respected. His, you know, I don't know if Michigan being closer to South Dakota makes him more of a natural fit. I'm sure he likes being the coach at Alabama, but it's a difficult job being the coach at Alabama. And so I think everyone who just speculates that he might, again, be a better fit and enjoy coaching at Michigan more, none of us really know. I can't imagine a scenario which he leaves. I mean, why would a coach leave a college football playoff right before the playoff? That would never happen in college football. So I can't imagine him leaving, but in all seriousness. Like, Jed Fish is the name that popped up immediately and makes a lot of sense. He's the head coach at Washington. He does not want to be the head coach at Washington. He looked to get out several times this year. He was the offensive coordinator at Michigan for 2 years previously. He's well-respected. He's a good offensive mind. Would he be like the slam dunk home run? No, he wouldn't be. But at this point, the pickings are slim. We've already gone through this cycle with so many prominent jobs open. You know, Penn State ended up getting Matt Campbell, but all those other Power Four jobs, the Auburns of the world, you know, Florida, they've got good coaches, but they weren't able to pry the big names away. So I think Michigan's in a tough spot right now. I think Jed Fish would be a decent hire for them.
Now, do you believe ultimately the Heisman Trophy winner would come down to moments, meaning Mendoza's Heisman moment that he had last weekend, or do you think it'll come down to just actual play? Because you look at Diego Pavia, if you're just talking about play, he's clear-cut the winner.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm biased. I've seen probably every snap of Pavia this year. I think he should win. His stats, everything, you know.
And not saying that Mendoza hasn't been great, because he's been really good this season.
No, he's been great. Yeah, yes. He's got everything. And he has two top five wins away from home. They won at Oregon, and they beat Ohio State. And he didn't, you know, stats weren't great against Ohio State, but no one's stats are good. He made some big plays. I am not going to deny that. And while I've heard some people say, you can take both sides of this argument, he took over a college football playoff team. But they are better this year. Their offense is better. But they also have a good defense to complement him. You know, one of the critiques of the Heisman Trophy is that there are too many voters, and there are too many people that don't cover college football week in and week out. So there's people that aren't tuned in all the time, and they might have been just watching championship weekend and then watch them make a third down throw, and have Gus Johnson go wild telling us the best throw in the history of college football. So I think there's a lot of people that will vote. They get into that Heisman moment. I think a lot of people that really cover the sport will dig in and look at the year-long accomplishments. I think it's going to be close. My guess would be that Mendoza's going to win.
Mitch Light is with us. Mitch, speaking of quarterbacks, I didn't get a chance to get your perspective last week because you're following recruiting quite extensively, so you have the right perspective. Jared Curtis, has Vanderbilt ever had a recruit even close to his accolades, just when you look at five-star, et cetera?
What sport? Because you were pretty highly ranked, right, in basketball?
I was.
Yes, he was.
Not really. Not really.
They didn't have stars out there then.
But let's stick to football.
That's right. That's right.
Stick to football. Baseball. Baseball, Tim Corbin's got a lot of them, right? And basketball has had some good ones. But football, I don't remember one.
No, never signed in the modern recruiting era, has never signed a top a five-star. So, like, Jared Curtis in the 247 composite was the number one player, the number one overall player, and the number one quarterback, and have never signed a five-star. There's been some top 100 guys, some fringe top 100 guys. There's been some former five-stars transfer in. Actually, I'd have to look that up. There's been some top 100 players recently transfer in, but clearly Jared Curtis is the most notable recruit in school history, not just because he's the number one player, the fact that he was committed to Georgia and flipped at the last minute. You know, so yes, you cannot overstate like the significance to the program of getting him to commit.
Here's some information from ESPN. Quote, Curtis's signature, this is right after he made the decision. Mm-hmm. Curtis's signature will hand Vanderbilt its first ESPN 300 edition since cornerback Martell Hite, number 274 in 2023. The program's first five-star signee, He'll soon replace wide receiver Jordan Cunningham, number 107 in the 2013 ESPN 300, as the Commodore's highest-ranked recruit in school history. It's a different service, but on ESPN, that's what it says.
Yeah, I think from the 247 composite, I think Nephi Leilau, the defensive lineman who signed under Derek Mason, was ranked like 100 or 101. I think he might be the top-ranked prospect in school history. Now, the 27 commitment they got a few weeks ago, I forgot his name, Omari something, he's local. He's a top 100 kid in the 27 class. Obviously not what Jared Curtis is, but that would be two top 100 kids in consecutive years.
So, Mitch, I think the next question is the momentum that you can get off of this, because oftentimes you get a guy like that and it leads to other doors opening. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think they got the wide receiver who flipped from Alabama.
Owen Keppel.
I think commits flipped due in large part because of Jared Curtis. And so I think what you'll see, though, is for Vanderbilt's sake, hopefully this impacts the 27 and 28 classes, because it was kind of too late in the process to get a lot of the other guys on board in the 26 class. So they're saying, hey, we got Jared Curtis. You want to come play with him? So I think no doubt, and it should help them immensely in the transfer portal, which opens January 2nd, because they need some offensive linemen, could probably use one more wide receiver. It's like, hey, this guy's going to be on campus. You want to play with him. So there's no doubt. It just helps in so many ways. I've had this discussion because, like, they would have been in the market with what they've done offensively. And Tim Beck, you know, the offensive coordinator, how respected he is. They would have been able to get a really good dual-threat quarterback to run this offense. So some people have said, well, would you have rather had a veteran who's more established or roll the dice with a freshman, assuming Curtis wins the job? And it's actually a legit question, except you can't say no to Jared Curtis from all the other reasons. You know, first of all, down the road, hopefully he turns into an elite quarterback, but for all of the other reasons, Willie, we were just talking about there, the notoriety, the recruiting, bringing more people on board. So there's really no negatives from signing the number one player in the country.
Well, it's very early, but what do you think the plan is for him? You want him to go win the job, right? It's like the first overall pick in the draft. You sort of expect him to win it. But as you mentioned, it's not easy for any true freshman to jump in there and play. So what will they do with other quarterbacks on the roster in the portal? What do you foresee, even though it's very early right now?
Yeah, I think the plan, obviously, he's going to be an early enrollee, so he'll have spring practice. Blaise Berlewitz, who, you know, transferred from New Mexico State, has been the number two quarterback. And, you know, he did some really good things in preseason camp, but it can be a little erratic with the ball. He's a very good athlete. Obviously, he's a good fit for this offense. I believe he is coming back and will compete with Jared Curtis. We all expect Jared Curtis to get the job, but I think Berlewitz would be the backup option there. I doubt they would get a portal quarterback there. I mean, they might try. There have been examples of guys, veterans who have started elsewhere, transferring to teams for like their last year, knowing that they're not really going to have a chance to earn the job. Those guys are hard to find, and usually not, quite frankly, very good. They're not guys you want to have to play. So I think it's probably going to be Jared Curtis with Blaise Berlewitz competing with him for the job.
Mitch Light of The Athletic has been our guest on D-Mays, Ving, and the Donick. He joins us every week during college football season. Mitch, thank you so much for your time. As always, we'll catch up next week.
Take care, guys.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, yesterday we discussed 49ers defensive coordinator Robert Saleh as a potential Titans head coaching candidate. We're going to discuss another coordinator who's getting a lot of buzz about potentially being the Titans' next head coach. 615-737-1025. This Sunday, the NFL Game of the Week is the Vikings versus the Cowboys at 7:20 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. The NFL Game of the Week is presented by Circus Sportsbook Kentucky and Masero in 12 South.